A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This is a Lip Media podcast.
We acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we are recording. We pay our respects to the elders past and present, and the Aboriginal elders of other communities who may be listening today. Welcome to The Gayser Revolting, a definitive weekly news source for contemporary gays.
We put the G in LGBTQIA+, and we're here to help you be the best G you can be.
You can follow us on Instagram at GaysRevoltingPod or join our Facebook group at The Gayser Revolting. Hey guys.
Hello.
Hey.
Nice to see you all again.
All? All well. Feels, can we say all?
It feels like a while since we've been here.
It does feel like it's just been an epic week, I think.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Long weekend.
Oh, it's a long weekend.
Yes.
Oh,
and also because we're recording on Tuesday now, we were Mondays before for a few weeks.
Because so we had an extra day.
Because Tom's selfishly having a comedy show. Yeah.
I feel like I've come out the end of, like, hibernation.
Oh.
Because I've genuinely had, like, shows on every single night or doing this podcast.
Yeah, I don't
know. On the
know
one night
how.
Of the week that I had off. And I just feel like I'm free and I'm alive and I can eat healthy things and not get drunk every night. It's really nice.
Oh, wow.
Well, I should probably insult you guys.
Please.
Start
it'd
off,
only feel right.
Because it has been a while. Yeah. Let's start off with a quiz this week. Okay. So, everyone, what is something that's over 800 years old, is currently flaming, and has seen years of homophobic abuse?
Oh.
It's not Notre Dame. It's our first host, Tom.
Oh, that's lovely.
Oh, that was a good one. I like
Thank
that.
You for coming in. And happy birthday to Kyle as well.
Oh, no. Yep.
You turned 28
mm-hmm.
over the weekend, or was it last week?
It was last Tuesday.
So just proving that things can last past their expiration date. Oh. And it is sad to say Mikey's not here this week.
With us in spirit.
With us in spirit and without a cock ring.
Oh, yeah.
As well.
Oh, that it's probably just fully healed. That's why he's not here this
he's
week.
He's finally got
he's
to just
like he's banging
drugs again.
Yeah. We'll let the listeners connect the dots on why he's not here this week. Hi, Josh. And we're also going to edit in an interview.
We have a pre-record this week.
Yeah.
We're getting so high-tech.
This is pretty exciting, but we've got our first ever RuPaul's Drag Race girl on the show this week. I got to have a early morning chat with Thorgy Thor.
Gross.
Had it go. I'm very excited to hear it. I haven't heard it yet.
Yeah, it went well. I think it bodes well for future RuPaul's girls.
Hopefully she's the first of many.
Yeah. So,
so how was everybody's long weekend?
Wonderful. I did a last one of our shows and then have not done... I've literally been on the couch since then because it's been nice to not have to do anything.
Yeah,
it's
I bet. Great.
Did you guys do Easter stuff?
Well, I went to the country with Duncan because we had a 30th to go to.
Okay.
And it was all very Eastery and I was like, oh, wow, people still get chocolate as adults.
Oh,
and
nice.
I'm for it.
I didn't have a single Easter egg this Easter, but I did scoff down an entire thing of hot cross buns when I was hungover.
I do like hot cross buns.
Coles has like salted caramel hot cross
amazing.
Buns.
Amazing.
Yum. I like all the weird variations you can get.
Did you see the outrage about the rainbow hot cross buns at the, I think it's the South Melbourne markets?
No, yes. I can see where this is going.
There's so like some like nice baker guy that has a market store. I'm pretty sure it was the South Melbourne markets. It was in the newspaper. Decided to do unicorn hot cross buns that were like rainbow colors. And these religious people got offended because it was gay affiliated. And the guy was like, I just did it because my daughter likes rainbow stuff. So I made some rainbow hot cross buns.
Oh,
it wasn't even
stage.
Yeah, like just stick to the holy cross on the top of them. And then I went away on the weekend and I did some driving for the first time.
I did drugs.
I mean, look.
Because you didn't have a driver's license. None of us have driver's licenses, do we?
I got my learner's, I think, 2 years ago or a year and a half ago. And this is the first time I've been behind the wheel since.
Yeah, right.
Because it was like the long country roads.
How did you go?
Yeah, I was fine. See, it was a bit stressful when those big trucks and stuff were driving. Yeah, that's so I was like, oh God, this is how I die.
We need to do an investigation into why gay men don't have their driver's licenses, as a side note.
We spoke about it.
I did some recently as well to a country town because I hadn't driven in years. And I was fine. And then all of a sudden I was on like a country highway where it was just like one lane either way with these massive trucks coming towards me. And I'm like screaming and my friend's going, okay, well, we're just going to pull over really soon. And I'm like, because like the slightest, you're going like 100 kilometers an hour and the slightest little nudge and you're in front of one of those massive trucks.
And then like so many kangaroos and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And then like you're having like dodge
all these. Was it daytime or nighttime?
Daytime. Oof. Yeah, so yeah. I mean, about like 2 hours. And it was raining. So, you know, multiple conditions.
Mm. Oh, good on you. You ready to get your license now?
No.
We saw a ghost when we went. I'm not even joking.
A ghost?
We saw a ghost when you went driving in the country, yeah.
Were you on drugs?
No. It was really spooky. The guy driving, his name was Cliff, I think.
And God, did he drive off a cliff?
No, he kept telling us how if a kangaroo, this is useful actually, if a kangaroo jumps in front of your car, don't swerve.
I
know,
I would have a big problem with that. Like, I don't think I mentally could do it.
Through it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because swerving means you go into the...
of another truck or something.
Yeah. So he said it like 15 times and a few of us are like watching the trees go by. And I was like, did we just pass a person? And this was like middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
About 3 a.m. in the morning. And my friends were like, yeah, there was just a guy standing in the middle of a field holding a
bow. No, I've seen that movie. It's like Jeepers Creepers or something.
In between like the trees, illuminated by the lights of the car. And we're like, that's so weird. What would he be doing? Oof. We've been out of town for like an hour at that point. We turned back to look at the road and a kangaroo jumps out in front of us.
Oh, shit.
And Cliff swerves. So we go into
after he's been telling you.
So we went into a ditch. I pooped my pants a little bit.
Yeah.
So we all had to get out the car.
For that reason.
And we were there for about 20 minutes and then we never talked about the man with the bucket.
Ooh. Can we not haunt our listeners?
Yeah.
Like, that's so creepy.
Spooky.
Oh, tell the story, but make it gay.
Yeah, make it gay. It's like, he had great nails. Like,
he was gay. Yeah. He was definitely so gay.
He was flying the rainbow flag behind that tree.
Seeing as we've just had Anzac Day, I thought it'd be really nice to talk about
I was like, just had? LGBT. I was like, I forget. I was like, wait, I missed that.
We will have just had by the time it says.
Yes, I get it.
It would be a nice time to talk about the LGBTI community's contribution to the Anzacs. It's not something that's really taught. Well, I feel like it's been talked about more and more recently, but not really something that was historically talked about. And something I didn't really realise until I was recently doing some research for the podcast was that the Australian Army didn't really have a policy against gays until 1943, because the Americans were really against it.
Yeah.
And they were doing their research to try and find.
They were proactive.
They did research to try and find gay. Like, didn't they have bigger problems going on at the time?
You would think so, but they saw it, the Americans saw it as a huge threat to America's military force. And they discovered that in 1940, well, they discovered in 1943.
So you could say they discovered our podcast. And they figured it out.
They discovered there was all of these gay Australians, because there was a whole lot of Americans and Australians based in New Guinea.
Yeah.
And that these Australians were like bang up for it and were quite often quite promiscuous, as the research would show. There's an interview in the Gay and Lesbian Archives where one gay soldier talks about how he would often just go into the barracks because the Americans were split into black and white. At the time, he'd go into the black Americans' barracks and just lie on a bed and let them take turns at fucking him. Gore Vidal said that the Australians were well known for happily lying on their belly and taking it and that sort of thing. So apparently we were... well known as the power bottoms in World War II.
Sorry,
which actually is something that needs to be talked about more often. I think that's hilarious. But one thing that I have always noticed when you read sort of accounts and people's, especially the prisoners of war during World War II, was that there was kind of a thriving queer community in the Australian and New Zealand Army Corps, especially in these prisoner of war camps. There was huge drag numbers that were put on. And this was also at a time where there wasn't a lot of knowledge around people who identified as transgender or anything like that.
Yeah.
And at a time when people would often use drag as a way of exploring sexuality and gender. And there was massive productions put on in these prisoner of war camps. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys know Danny LaRue, the British drag performer. Danny LaRue was an iconic drag performer after World War II, but was one of these ones that started out performing for the troops, became so good at it that they would come back after the war. A lot of them came back to London and to Sydney and started performing.
Just like remained like...
Yeah, wow. Yeah. There's a great story about...
Imagine discovering you were like great drag performer in the war.
Well, there was a really great... There was a fantastic exhibition at the Art Centre in Gallery One a couple of years ago about drag in wartime. Mm-hmm. And they had photos and they were using what they could find, and they were doing some pretty amazing looks, like turning some really strong... Wow. Like
a lot of camo, I bet. A lot of camo looks.
There's a great story about Pinky... I can't remember what his nickname was. Pinky
Smith.
Was it?
I think it was Smith.
Yeah, right. They were doing a production of The Mikado, and the photos of it are really, like, this is a full-on production in a German prisoner of war camp. And one of the guys had a go at him for being, I think they called him a fag or a poofter or something like that, and was sort of being a bit relentless with his bullying of him. And another guy turned to him and said, "You might want to be careful. Don't forget he's the 3-time heavyweight boxing champion back in Australia." Oh. And so this boxing champion had gone over and was doing these incredible drag performances.
That's
and
so
stuff.
Cool.
See, I would rather watch that as a sitcom as opposed to like Will or Grace.
Yeah.
Will or Grace. Pick one.
Yeah. Someone had a...
To enter.
Someone had a sitcom about Will or Grace in prisoner of war camps. That'd be really fascinating. But the vibe you get when you read these firsthand recounts is that in World War One and World War Two, it was actually quite accepted, and people either accepted it or turned a blind eye to it and weren't that fussed by it. There was kind of a sense of camaraderie, I think, amongst a lot of the Anzacs where they were incredibly accepting in that time. Sadly, after that, the Australian Army as an institution, as opposed to the individuals, became quite aggressive with their attitude towards LGBTI people. Mm. And then that then, I think, probably seeped down into the people on the ground as well. And then you sort of see right up until, I think it was 1982, when there was 5 gay ex-servicemen that tried to lay a wreath in memory of LGBTI people.
Oh, yeah, I remember reading about that. Yeah,
which and then they tried to heartbreaking. There's photos of it. So at the big war memorial on Anzac Day in Melbourne, these 5 guys tried to lay a wreath to remember the LGBTI people that had served.
Yeah,
and they were physically stopped by, I can't remember his name, but he was the head of the return services, like Reg something or other. And he physically stopped them. Luckily, 1992, I believe it was, the army got rid of the rules that they'd introduced in 43 and started becoming more progressive with their acceptance of LGBTI people. Yeah. And then that sort of continued in 2005. I think they started recognising partners of serving Anzacs as far as benefits and that sort of thing go the same way that they do for heterosexual partners. And now there's, you know, we've got trans people.
Accepting now, I don't really like
the Australian army is incredibly accepting now and actively advertises trying to recruit members of the LGBTI
then you
community.
See people in like floats and things. Like
So they marched in Mardi Gras. I think they had about 300 people marching in Mardi Gras last year.
That's good.
They've marched in Mardi Gras for a while. Mm. Like I often see Facebook ads pop up and stuff where they're specifically looking
I've wondered why I keep getting targeted.
Ads for the army.
Like, no.
Plus a whole.
I'd love to
like,
see you serve in war. What would you do?
Oh. Well,
drag. Yeah.
My knowledge of like war and being in the army is like extensively based purely on pornography. So
I mean, from all accounts, it's actually pretty accurate from what I've been reading.
Well, yes, yeah.
Well, reading about it, I was like, gays have, at least in my experience, been very active, usually with 1 or 2 penises at the same time, you know. And for like a point of reference, Don't Ask, Don't Tell, which was the American stance on queer
gays
people serving.
Yeah.
When was that repealed or like...
It was only 2010.
Yeah. So in some ways, you know, as much as I rag on white Australians on this show, we like can be quite progressive in other ways. Mm-hmm. It kind of makes sense to me from like a psychological point of view. You put people together in like a high pressure environment and you have to sort of put aside a lot of your differences.
Totally.
It's like
survival.
Yeah. It's like when people get trapped in an elevator or something, you don't care anymore so much about the finer details because you're humans trying to survive a pretty bleak circumstance.
Or when you're trapped in an Uber with someone.
Yeah.
Yeah, or when your Uber driver asks for your phone number right as you're about to get out. It's like
you need to stop talking to your Uber drivers.
There's a lot of stories of men that served and women that served in the army that were heterosexual prior to and post-war but had same-sex relations.
So they found their sexuality. reality.
Yeah, or at least experimented with it. Yeah. And I think part of that would have been the fear of not knowing what comes next and wanting somebody. And it would have been a really crazy time. And so being sent away, you didn't know if you're going to come back. You didn't know if when you came back, Australia would still be Australia.
Jesus.
So I think it would have been a very scary time. And finding companionship in the people that you were with would have been a very natural reaction, I think. Yeah. One of the interesting things that I was reading about was that a lot of men joined the army because of the hyper-masculinity of the propaganda that the army had been putting out. So it sort of gave this image of, you know, masculinity and men fight and that sort of stuff. So there was a lot of guys with sort of internalized homophobia that sort of joined the army thinking it would straighten them out. Mm-hmm. But ironically then found themselves in a situation, a same-sex sort of situation, and with plenty of opportunities to
be man up, gay
sex.
Go spend a whole lot of time with a whole lot more men.
Yeah. It's like joining the wrestling team.
Yeah.
Because you want to be a real
tight
man.
Fitting outfits.
But I mean, sort of when you read some of these people's recounts, you get the vibe, and I hope it was what happened for a lot of them, is that instead of finding that they needed to be straightened out, they sort of found something a little bit more acceptable or exciting and that they found, hopefully, I hope for them, that they found some sort of sense of normality and other people that felt the same way as them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. A lot of these kids came from tiny little country towns of 100 people that were working on farms and probably had these hidden secret feelings that they would never have talked about. And so, would have joined up thinking, oh, well, that'll fix me up.
Work.
And instead, maybe, hopefully, found other people that were like-minded.
It's like when I misguidedly joined a football team.
I feel like we would have all done things like that. I mean, not necessarily joined the army, but like trying to do things.
I think that's probably why I tried to do sports stuff.
Absolutely, for like one whole day. But
it's the same situation. You're surrounded by other men.
You're like, this is what I should be doing.
Having the same,
This is what men like.
Recipe for disaster. And it's interesting too, because when we had that live show, someone had asked us, I'd had a bit to drink that night. Someone had asked us about like jobs that queer people were attracted to and what industries were sort of in and what ones don't have gay people. But I feel like there isn't an industry that doesn't have gay people. Like,
no.
We just work jobs. We play jazz music sometimes.
Yeah. It's interesting you bring that up, because it's just going back to the story about New Guinea, where the Americans' army reported to the Australian army that there was all these Australians bottoming for all these Americans. They referred to themselves as girls and the girlfriends of the American men and that sort of stuff. And that's when the army sort of started getting concerned, because they felt like that was perhaps developing from homosexuality to,
and they
although they didn't use in any of the reports the word transgender identifying people, like that's what they were worried about. But it turns out that 13 of the 18 people that they interviewed, of the Australians that were calling themselves girls, were David Jones employees from Melbourne.
They all worked
at David Jones in Melbourne, which is interesting that retail has always been good
went,
for bottoms.
I have worked at David Jones.
I'm not joking. I went to David Jones on the weekend, and I've never felt so judged before.
Really?
Like, it was like Hunger Games level. Like, I was fearful, because I was looking at like dress shirts.
Yes.
And so I'd gone into like the suits area, and I'd never felt so surrounded by like, what is it like, fiscally conservative, socially liberal type of gaze, that I was like, I gotta get out of here. This seems like a weird horror movie, because they're all like hiding behind racks of suits and popping up.
I just feel fat whenever I go there.
Oh.
It's crazy.
That's crazy to think that Dave Jones is that old.
And it is, sorry, mentioned briefly that lesbians as well, in society at the time, sort of had a more reserved approach when it came to lesbianism.
Okay.
Is that story of when they were investigating this woman who was serving, I think she was a nurse, was found in a bathtub with another nurse and then was interviewed.
Scandal.
And then was interviewed after, and she was asked if she was a lesbian. She didn't even know what that meant. She said, I'm a Presbyterian. She thought it was like a religion or something like that.
Kind of.
Because a lot of the women that were going away and serving had sort of been kept at home until they married, and then they moved in with their husband, and that was life. So for a lot of the women would start experimenting and that sort of thing
This is like fascinating. Because like,
it's
time. I mean, I didn't really learn any of this, because I only did year 11 and 12 in Australia. So when, like, you see it pop up on Facebook and stuff, and I think we've posted a few times, but just like those old black and white photos of people being gay in those times, or, like secret notes and things like that. I love that kind of stuff. It's so heartwarming to kind of just know that we've always been there. We've always existed.
Exactly. And these assholes in 1982 can try and stop us from dropping race, but we were there and we are part of it.
It's beautiful.
It's pretty fascinating.
I love it.
Yeah, it's cool with these historical movements because visibility, I think, is such an important part of our culture and our rights moving forward. Mm. And, you know, the most offensive thing about not being able to lay a wreath back in the 80s, it highlights that we've always been involved in some pretty important historical events, and it's not something that just suddenly popped up.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It's just discovering it.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's some beautiful letters as well.
It's also nice to know that there was lots of people at the time that weren't fussed by it. I think we think of, if you think olden days, you think of unaccepting backwards,
it's just
that
very
sort of
rigid,
thing.
Like
it's nice to know. Yeah. I mean, they say, that was that quote, the war, I don't know who said it, but war is the great equalizer. And it's used to talk about when people went away in those days. You might be a person of color next to someone that was quite high up and wealthy, next to somebody that was, you know, a poor factory worker or something. But once you're all in a uniform
and
you're all serving
lives
and fighting, you're just best mates and you just accept everybody because you need to do what you need to do to stay alive, I guess.
Definitely.
I've got a book at home and I meant to bring it in to show you guys, actually. A collection of poetry from World War II, from the Allied forces. But some of them are love poems to their fellow servicemen, you know.
That's beautiful.
Little known fact that actually originated from World War II.
Anzacs.
I can't tell when you're being serious or not. I'm just picturing like these like guys in camo, like in heels, just like
Yeah, totally. No, I'm joking.
Oh gosh, okay. It's like, yeah, I'm very gullible right now. I don't know Australian history.
Yeah, I could tell you anything right now.
But I do get why it can be quite jarring for people, for LGBTI people, to sort of acknowledge Anzac Day, because the army as an institution, as opposed to the individuals who are fighting, has been homophobic and transphobic for a long time and is only really sort of fixing itself now. It is understandable that a lot of people sort of find the day as a something that they're not part of. Mm-hmm. So I would say that maybe spend the day next year, now that it's passed, remembering who you want, like what you want to remember and that sort of thing, and maybe reading about these people that sacrificed so much. Because the ones that went away to fight between World War II and 1992 not only had to sort of sacrifice themselves for war, but also sacrifice their personality and keep that hidden and secret.
That's crazy. I can't even. My nana used to fly fighter planes and stuff.
Like
Yeah, my dad's side of the family, all aviation. My nana.
Scared to ask what side of the war your family were on.
But we have all these really beautiful old black and white photos of my grandmother on aeroplane like wings and like doing like with a makeup compact.
Oh, cool.
And then newspaper articles written about her, and they used to call her Barefoot Phyllis because she'd only fly aeroplanes barefoot.
Oh, cool.
And she used to get like disqualified from flying competitions for reckless flying because she used to enjoy clipping the tops of trees.
Oh, that's
and just
so
like all
cool.
this crazy. Like she was such a cool rebel, and like she's like my favorite.
My grandma was in a girl band.
Wow.
Yeah, well, this is the one on mum's side. That's how my grandparents. Yeah. So my grandfather that served with the army after World War II, she was in a girl band, and they would tour all the army bases around Australia, and he would go and like try and chat her up all the time, and like asked her out several times after her gigs, and she kept saying no, and eventually she said yes.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it's really cute.
Aww.
Our grandparents
are like so cool.
Yeah. Them as being so boring, they were hardcore.
My dad's pretty bad though. He absconded. That's how he met.
Remind me what absconded means.
Well, he avoided conscription.
Yeah. Oh, okay, right. I thought it meant
that. Donald Trump, and he's the president of the United States.
Yeah, didn't
States,
he do that? He
similar men.
Yeah,
but my dad left, geez. And that's actually how he met my mother in the Philippines.
So if he didn't do that, you might not have a
I
loop.
Wouldn't be here.
Wow.
No. And that took, I think, about 20 years of prodding and plying dad with alcohol.
You're right.
Like, when we think about the Anzacs, we think about people in their 70s, you know, and there's a disconnect that, no, these people were in their 20s when this happened.
So young. Yeah.
That is a life-changing event to be a part of. It doesn't really compare to anything we can.
Nothing at all. No, absolutely. Yeah.
Not. Yeah.
It puts a lot of things into context when, especially when I think about my 20s, the worst thing is like losing Wi-Fi for a while or whatever. So I think respect is due.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely.
Even if you don't, for myself, I don't support war I don't like the political nature of using Anzacs as this image of masculinity
I also think I totally agree with you. I don't like the glorification of war or support war in any sense, but I think World War II is very much a war that no one really wanted to enter. It wasn't a war over resources or something like that. It was, if we don't, then to give you a history lesson, Kyle.
Yay!
Japan and Germany were major powers fighting against Australia. And they'd sort of basically decided what country would be governed by which country after the war. And Japan was supposed to get Australia and was so confident that they would, that they had warehouses of Australian yen printed and ready to go for when they'd taken. And that's it was the Japanese that bombed Darwin.
Yeah.
But it, you're right. The glorification of it isn't nice, but we should remember the people that didn't want to go that did and sacrificed anyway.
Absolutely. I feel like it was a less of an engineered war.
Yes, yeah, yeah, very true.
That you see now, which, you know, the political landscape is just fucked. And ultimately for me, it's something that just doesn't sit right with my own personal values. But it's important to give respect and acknowledge the people that did fight and what they did do and their place in history and their place and what they've done for this country, whether that aligns with my precious North Side values or not. So there are some things where you have to check yourself at the door. Anyone that served time for their country, that's one of the things.
Yeah, definitely.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
As I mentioned earlier, I went away this past weekend to the country.
Did you?
And I did. And it was very funny because I was sitting there with Duncan, like at this 30th, and there were all these like old country families. And it was weird, all the conversations that I got stuck in, because a lot of people were just talking about all the homes that they're going to buy and all their kids that they're having. And I felt very out of place a lot of the time. And I kind of felt like I was just sitting there very quietly. And I was like, oh my gosh, I need to get my fucking life under control. Like, what am I doing? I'm not in plans to buy a house. I can barely afford to live. And then I started thinking, I was like, you know what? Fuck that. Like, that doesn't apply to
it's
me.
Not what you
like,
want. Yeah.
That's like a very straight ideology.
It is, absolutely. And heteronormative,
just,
we call that.
Yeah. And it's just, it's so interesting because so many people are so constrained and tied down by that.
This concept.
Yes, this concept that once you get to a certain age, you have to have a certain job, you have to settle down with, find kids, a partner, have a kid, buy a house. That's not for me. I mean, as gay men or queer people, we're not restrained by that. I mean, no one really is, but it's not inbuilt into us because we're not so desperate to have children. Or a lot of us aren't, I guess. I kind of felt a big sigh of relief when I came to this conclusion because I like my life and I like how I live
it. Do whatever the fuck you want
to
do.
Yeah, and it's funny because I was speaking to my friend and she was saying that I don't think she ever really wants to have children. And she said she surrounds herself because she loves gay people and like being friends with gay people. Not because like just to have a GBF or anything like that, or like a very materialistic basic bitch kind of like ownership thing. You know what I mean? Like a lot of girls have gay friends for that reason. But the fact that us gay people, like lifestyles match up with hers more.
Yeah.
And like she sees it as they're more in it for the long run because it matches up with her lifestyle of like being social and having like wine nights and things like that. And you're not being like,
heterosexual people are starting to discover that they can have.
And I thought that was very refreshing.
Yeah,
to hear that and to know that we are valued for our lifestyles, even.
Settling down is a really interesting concept. I feel like when we had the whole marriage equality debate, everyone was expecting that that's what we do. But I can still have a concept of settling down. And I still wanted marriage equality because I think we should all have the option of doing it. But it doesn't mean we have to do it. For me, the ideal settling down would be. Have you watched that new David Attenborough documentary?
No, everyone keeps talking about
walruses.
It.
Oh, yeah,
is that the with the walruses died in the clip? I just saw that clip and I was like, maybe I shouldn't watch that.
Well, okay, I wasn't going to compare myself to the walruses. There was these birds.
Don't throw yourself off a cliff.
These birds that like settle on this one island off the coast of Queensland or something like that. And they like are totally in love, but they go around and they sometimes have sex with other birds and they go traveling around the world all the time. But then they always come back to this little to their little nest on this little island. That's what I want. Like I want somebody that day I'm going to be with forever. We can have a little bit of fun maybe here and there.
Yeah.
And we do exciting adventures and all that sort of shit. That's my idea of settling down, but not settling down and staying in the one place and having
absolutely
kids and that
sort
of shit.
Yeah. I mean, I've moved around a lot in my life. The thought of having like the same kind of family home even is just like baffling to me, just like being in that same kind of place. Mm. But I don't want to stop going out drinking or anything in the near future. I enjoy that aspect. No. And I know Duncan is such a party animal. He is like, I want to do this till I'm 80. Yeah.
Look, I don't see myself in the VIP room at Poofed when I'm 60.
Yeah.
Having said that, I hope I really like being actively involved in the physical play scene.
That's what I mean.
Talked about before. And I hope that I do continue to still go to gay nights and gay events and queer theatre and all that sort of stuff as long as I live. And I have no intention of settling down on that front. Maybe less of the 6 a.m.s at Revolver, but
No, absolutely. I agree. And it's like all about that kind of balance.
Yeah.
Doing fun weekend things as well.
Well, I don't necessarily think settling down is mutually exclusive with not being social and doing fun things.
I know. It's kind of like that's how
It's kind of funny that we're sort of pigeonholing heterosexual people into this very boring sounding lifestyle. Mm-hmm. Like for me personally, I don't plan what I do for the next week, so let alone 5 years from now or whatever.
Definitely.
And I'm happy to live that way. And luckily the people in my life are happy to put up with that. Mm-hmm. You know, my interests and my plans can change at any given time. And I think that's something that was afforded to me by the absolute fear from my family that I may be gay. You know, people's lifestyle, that's their...
Absolutely,
their thing. And as long as they're not pushing it on me, raising a child sounds fucking horrific.
Yeah.
From what I've heard from my friends, it sounds like the worst possible thing you could ever do.
Yeah.
For you.
For you. Yeah.
I think it's fantastic now that gay people have the opportunity to have families and raise kids and things like that.
Yeah.
I think you sort of said we're pigeonholing people that their social life stops. I think it's kind of fair to say that anyone that has kids, regardless of whether they're homosexual or heterosexual, is sacrificing a large amount of their social time. Yeah. Like, that's just what you have to do when you have kids.
Yeah.
Buying a property, though, for example, doesn't equate to having children.
Yeah. No, but if we are talking about the white picket fence, kids and schools and that sort of thing, then that does sort of restrict your social life.
Mm.
Yeah.
I do respect people that find a balance.
Mm. Yeah, good
though,
on you.
We have a lot of psychs at my work who, God bless them, they've figured out how to live, basically. But they actually are more active with children than I am. They're going off to Rainbow Serpent and going to Burning Man Festival and making plans for when the kids are old enough to start going.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of like, you've actually figured out how to
do both.
That's both. Good. My viewpoint in is like, we need to stop thinking it's one or the other.
It's like, I guess, and then
all
also
or nothing, you know.
Settling down for a whole lot of different people would be completely different things. Like in the straight community, in the gay community. Mm. Yeah, I guess everyone would have their own version of it. I mean,
None of us are wrong. Mm. None of us are really doing it wrong.
Yeah, I guess it can just sort of feel like pressure to do it a certain way.
Except for Mikey. Mikey is doing it wrong.
But yeah, I felt like having a lot of conversations with some straight couples over the weekend, like maybe a little bit older than myself, and they would like put that pressure on Duncan and I, or like talk to us and be like, when are you two moving in together? When are you going to do this? Trying to make sense of us through their lifestyle.
Lenses,
Well, I do think that's definitely a thing. Straight people love projecting. It's kind of like when people put human clothes on pets or whatever and make them
that
just like
that is my
like
idea of settling down. I just get Albert like a whole wardrobe and we just live together for the rest of
our lives. Yeah, and like role play with their pets. I think some straight people do that with gay couples. Mm-hmm. Be like, you're going to move in now and you're going to have the most fabulous place and it's going to look incredible.
I think I go through phases as well where being more low-key and chill, that's really good. And then you can have phases when you're just like partying like every fucking night for a couple months. And it's good that to have the freedom to do so.
Yeah.
You know, being an introverted extrovert, I will have phases where I need to be out and I need to be doing the most ridiculous things and I need to get that energy out of my system.
Yeah.
And then I come down off of that and I need to hibernate for a bit to build back up. And that's really difficult to be in a relationship with.
Mm-hmm.
That's a nightmare for a lot of people. And so my relationship to settling down / living it up has always been really inconsistent yeah. because that's who I am and yeah. the way my brain works. Mm-hmm. It's funny because a lot of my previous relationships, I haven't been able to maybe communicate it quite well. Mm-hmm. Or I didn't have quite a good grasp on the concept. Obviously, all those relationships ended, but there was often a sense of being cheated, like feeling a bit cheated by it because they would have caught me in one swing of the motion. Then,
like hold you to it. Like,
yeah. And then it swung the other way, be it me being really low key and them loving that and then me going.
You're absolutely allowed to change and evolve. And
yeah. So I've kind of like not put any expectations on me and been really upfront about it. I'm just an inconsistent person. Yeah. This is the most consistent thing that I've done and that I've
You're one constant.
Yeah. And that for me, settling down will always involve some level of inconsistency.
Yeah.
Where,
but I mean, you might meet your ideal match will be like exactly the same and like ride that roller
coaster.
No,
that's a nightmare situation.
No, oh, you that don't? Be, okay. Well, there's no helping you. I don't know how to help you, Luke.
I think settling down for me, I would like someone who maybe has the stability of a constant persona,
yes, okay.
as opposed to one that fluctuates
to ground you a little bit.
Day by day. Yeah. This sounds really sexist, but what am I going to say?
I hate women.
It sounds really sexist, but that old saying about like periods syncing up, if you have a really inconsistent mental health sort of state,
you
can sync up with someone else pretty quickly. And you can end up just as bad as one another. And I think I've always been attracted to people that I've seen a bit of myself in and then realized, we're sinking.
Oh,
we're sinking
like
up.
Kind of like hive mentality.
Yeah. And so when you're down, you don't have that up person around anymore. You've synced up and now they're down.
You set them free into the world next.
Yeah. And so I don't know how we got so far into my personal life.
That's great.
On this topic. But I don't have any expectations for the future. Settling down for me does not necessarily mean children and property. I see that as something great that white people can
do. It might be something I want one day, but for the time being, I'm fine.
I don't get it. Yeah. I just don't actually understand the logistics of how someone in their early to mid-20s can own a property and create another life.
It's insane.
I think my concern is that I just change my mind about everything so often.
Yeah, I'm very indecisive.
You know, like
well.
The baby would be coming out and I'd be like, oh, actually.
I wanted blue eyes, actually.
Yeah.
No, I'd just be like, oh, actually, I think I just want to go on a holiday.
I have my receipt.
Yeah.
So good on them for however they rorted the system. So we're joined by Thorgy Thor, a drag performance artist and professional musician from Brooklyn, New York. How are you this morning, Thorgy?
Ooh, I like that introduction. I'm doing great. How are you guys?
We're so excited to have you on the show. Thank you for your time.
Oh, my pleasure.
Now, you're part of the cast for a new TV special called Drag Me Down the Aisle, which airs this week on TLC in Australia. So how were you cast or picked to be one of the queens on the show?
Oh, that's really interesting. I heard about it first, like, through the grapevine, through my management team. And I was kind of picked because I am a professional player. I played violin, viola, cello since I was little. And when I got old enough, I started my own company after college. And I've played many events, a lot of studio recording sessions, some of them with really big pop stars. And I actually had a side business playing weddings. So I've actually played violin or viola or cello for probably close to 2,000 weddings over the last, 10 years.
Oh, my God.
So the fact that I did drag and I was this crazy nightlife character for years and also paired with just being an expert at wedding music, it was kind of fitting for me to be picked for the show. So I was really honored to start having fun with brides,
It's quite a dream team that you've got there. You've got BB, Alexis Michelle, and my favorite, Juju B, a bit of Asian representation on the team. And I just love how all your personalities merge together and play off each other, especially you and BB seem to have quite a good rapport.
I know. Well, I've known BB. She was a New Yorker for a long time, and we used to work together. And she's just the most ridiculous person I've ever met in my entire life. Everything that you're going to see on the screen is exactly how she acts all day long. So she's a crazy person.
Now, you did film the show, or the first episode, I think, in Pennsylvania. And I watched that episode, and there was a moment where the bride actually asked if you could meet her father out of drag, because he was a bit conservative. He didn't feel comfortable for that first interaction to be the big Thorgy full experience. Now, you handled it really well, and I think that moment will resonate with a lot of LGBT people.
Yeah.
How did that feel in the moment? Was it something you were expecting? Was it completely unscripted and unexpected moment for you?
Yeah. You know, I've been asked this question before, and I still don't know how to answer it. It's just, I'm comfortable all the time, so it doesn't matter what I'm wearing. But I did say to him, you know, when we talked, I immediately just reacted like, sure, I just love meeting people. You know, I don't really care what I'm wearing. But, you know, it really wasn't about me at that moment. It was immediately about, like, if this bride feels more comfortable with having a fabulous queen meet her father, dress differently the first time, then it's about her. It's not really about me or my ego. But I always thought, you know, no matter what, I can always convince people. I was like, let me get the guard down first and then come out fabulous. And, you know, once people meet people and we get along, it doesn't matter what you're wearing at the end of the day, you know?
I really wish you got him into drag, though.
That was my goal.
You were so close, I think. So close. We talk on our show about body image issues in the queer community quite a bit. And obviously, being a makeover format show, there's a bit of that on Drag Me Down the Aisle. Now, the episode I've seen focuses a lot on the bride just not feeling beautiful in her wedding dress. Was it important to you to communicate that kind of body positivity message that is, you know, really important at the moment?
Absolutely. You know, you stole the term body positivity, and it doesn't matter what skin you're in, or how much you weigh, or if you have a giant, you know, shark bite scar across your chest. It's like, you got to wear it with pride, and you have to feel good in your own skin.
Who told you about my shark bite?
Do you have a shark bite?
No, I'm just joking.
That would have been incredible. I am a little psychic.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is really important to just make people feel or allow them to feel really good in their own skin. And if it takes a fabulous foursome to kind of kick them in the butt and a little bit and make them feel that, then we did our job, you know?
Yeah, I think you did an amazing job with that. As soon as someone's a bit more comfortable in their body, you really see them open up as a person.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it was great to see that. And I think drag is such an awesome gateway to getting people there. Now,
That's why I do it.
Most of our listeners will, of course, know you from RuPaul's Drag Race. Most recently, you were on All Stars, and I spend a lot of time on Reddit. I'm one of those Reddit annoying people that...
one of those people.
Yeah, so I apologize in advance. But a lot of people...
No, I read it once and I was like, no, this isn't for me. I can't check these things.
Some of the queens are on there, I think. Some of the queens interact and stuff. And, you know, there's rumors that certain people are actually like, that's really Aja. And
really?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I heard, like, people like me on Reddit. That's what people said. They were like, you're likable. There's like, people like you on Reddit. There's nothing nasty about you. I was like, well, even if there were, don't tell me.
You were like a meme queen on there during All Stars. Every episode you were on, they found something to latch onto. And one of the things they really responded to was they felt that you were a bit manipulated on the show by production and that you left way too early considering what you brought to the table. How do you feel about All Stars now that it's done and dusted?
Well, I'm kind of a mixed review, but I thought I did a wonderful job as Stevie Nicks. And if you compare all these divas together, if you want to talk specifically about that one episode, how can you compare Patti LaBelle to, you know, Stevie Nicks? How can you compare, you know, Diana Ross to Stevie? You know, we were all so different. But you know, I've said this before, and this is kind of where I've settled with that one episode and getting the boot, is that, you know, I would have picked Stevie Nicks if I had the chance, but we were kind of just like ascribed them. They picked like a diva that fit our personality, and I would pick Stevie Nicks tomorrow or the day after. I would always pick Stevie Nicks. We had no hand in the choreography, and we had no hand in writing the song. Do you see what I'm saying? So when I was judged based on that, I didn't know what I was being judged on.
It's kind of a shame.
The performance kind of paled in comparison, but I didn't write it or choreograph it. So I was just a little bitter about that. But looking back, I had fun, and I'm glad that all the girls got to shine, and I'm glad that I got to be Stevie Nicks yesterday, today, and tomorrow.
I still quote you from that episode, because there's that bit where you say, no one's in the front row at a Stevie Nicks concert going, yes, work, Stevie.
Work, Stevie, work. Because it's true. I mean, if you look at the history, there's a lot of, you know, LGBTQ family that really supports Stevie Nicks, but that's not the kind of show or
exactly,
the kind of culture
yeah.
that she's from. You know, she is a hippie woman who has this beautiful voice and, you know, from the 70s. Do you know what I mean? So it doesn't really resonate.
Yeah, next to...
I don't know. I'm going to put my foot in my mouth again. Yeah.
Whenever I have to do like a finance presentation at work, I always say, no one's at a finance presentation going, yes, Luke, work.
Work.
I say it all the time.
Very funny.
One of your other viral moments, of course, was, oh, Jesus, gross. I see that on Reddit all the time. I guess we kind of covered this a little bit, but did you expect that to go viral and to sort of resonate with people for as long as it has?
Absolutely not. I, you know, it literally organically just came out of my mouth because it was just how I was feeling.
Yeah.
I just felt like, this is really gross. Like, ugh, like get me off this stage. I'm so done with this show. Like, you know, I was really just fed up with it. And you know, the ugh gross wasn't towards Kennedy because she looked wonderful and she did a good job. And it wasn't at Shangela because she didn't ask to pick somebody. Do you know what I mean? She just had to. It was just kind of what she had to do. So it was kind of just, ugh, gross, like, get me out of here. I was kind of mad at the judges. I was mad at Rue, and I was mad at the whole situation. I just wanted out of there from the whole production. I was like, oh, this is just gross, like, that I'm even in the bottom two, and then I'm going home right now. It was so gross. I was so done. Like, get me out of here.
I think it was nice to see someone unfiltered. I think it stood out to a lot of people because it was just, like, an honest reaction. A queen being themselves and not sort of filtering over because there's a camera in front of them or three or four cameras, you know, just being like, you know what, this is gross, I'm going. So
bye. I like that they brought me back.
Oh yeah, and you looked amazing with that rusty sunglass.
It was like orange and blue, like this.
Yeah, that was a toot for me for that look. I promise we won't talk too much more about Drag Race, but I did have to ask about the jury episode when they did bring you back. You were the sole person to vote for Shangela, which was, I think, a shock to the production and to Shangela and to the other queens. Why do you think that
went
down the way it did?
I don't know. You know, we sat there and in the room and, you know, it really happened like that, you know, but behind the scenes, we really didn't get to like talk as a group who we were all voting for. We did not know. None of the eliminated queens that had to choose a lipstick knew what the other queens chose. So when it actually aired, I was like, everyone gasped because I was like, I was the only one who voted for Shangela.
Yeah.
Like, how is that possible? Yeah. See, this is why I always said to production and to RuPaul, I was like, I'm a good candidate for this competition to stay to the end because I'm very fair. And I might act like a really bitter person, and this is really disgusting. But at the end, they asked us to do a specific job, which was to pick who did the best.
Yeah.
And I was able to set aside any bitterness and any anger towards any girl who voted me off and just look at the task at hand and say who did the best. And I thought Trixie and Shangela did. So I picked them. You know, and I think a lot of the other queens may have had a personal vendetta against Shangela or something. You know, maybe. I don't really know, but I mean, it worked out really great for me. Everyone's just like, yeah, I was the only fucking one. So.
Yeah, it was a bit of a goop to see. I think everyone had predicted that top two. But one of the great things about you, I think, is that you are just an open book when you're on television. It's the same with Drag Me Down the Aisle. There's no sort of pretense when watching you, which I think is really entertaining and makes you a fan favorite for a lot of people.
Well, thanks a lot. It's who I am. I can't help it. I can't change it.
My last Drag Race question is your iconic lip sync, Chi Chi Devane and yourself. I think I've showed that performance to people who don't watch Drag Race just to say, look at this. This is what drag can be because it's iconic lip sync.
Thank you.
How do you feel looking back at that lip sync, you know, now that that's even further away than All Stars?
Yeah, well, I loved it. I love Chi Chi. I still text her, you know, once a week just to check in with her. We're really good friends. And when we were there, you know, when we walked out, I kind of was feeling that I was going to lip sync. And I just said, you know, give it my all. And if you think about it, if you get inside my head, it was like, from Dreamgirls, you know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
And I was literally lip syncing next to like a black girl from Shreveport, Louisiana, that didn't come from a lot of money. She was literally a living dream proposal.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? And then it was me, like, bouncing around, like, I don't really stand a chance. Even if I, like, grew wings out of my back and flew across the stage, I think she still would have stayed. You know what I mean? Like, there is nothing I could have done to stay. But yeah. I said, I'm going to give it my all. And we had a blast. And I'm glad that we both looked good. You know, we had a blast. And I look back at that show and I don't regret a single thing I did. I'm very, very proud of every single look and every single challenge. You know what I mean? Like, I just had such a good time. Mm. It's why I went back to All Stars, you know?
Yeah, it's amazing to watch you. Now, you talked about this on the show as well, but you started your own symphony orchestra, the Thorchestra. How's that been received? The orchestra community here in Melbourne can be a bit conservative. Has it gone off?
Oh, yeah.
Are people yassing in
the
front?
Oh, well, that's the thing. It's like, you know, so I've only done one big show, and it was in with Symphony Nova Scotia, and it was in Halifax in Canada. And, you know, we sold out like 2,300 seats in like 6 hours. So that to me, because I don't really sell tickets, you know, like that's not what I do. So I asked the team, I was like, is that like a good number? And they're like, are you crazy? That's incredible. So like, I was like, oh, okay. So, you know, we kind of parlayed that into a larger tour. So I'm actually playing with the Vancouver Symphony Orchestra, the Pittsburgh Symphony Orchestra, and New Year's I played with the San Francisco Symphony Orchestra. And it's just me acting like a clown on the stage. But then when I actually play and I solo and I look, you know, ridiculous and fabulous, all the professional players who may have been from a conservative background who think that I don't have a place there. Mm. I think because I'm a talented player, I win a lot of them over.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, and I've always, you know, I've heard this a lot. Like, George, you could be on stage and you could just play Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star and everyone would scream. And I'm like, yeah, I probably could, but I don't want to play for that audience. I want like the concertmaster of the New York Philharmonic to be sitting in the front row and come up and say like, you are fantastic. You know what I mean? Like, that's what I want.
Yeah, I love how drag is branching out into all these different areas, like Trixie with country music and the
Absolutely.
Classical and Baroque music that you play in the show as well. There's not a boundary there anymore that drag just has to be,
exactly.
you know, lip syncing to these very specific songs in bars that you can do drag. I think you
And actually... I feel very, very, I feel a lot of responsibility and a lot of weight on my shoulders to kind of shake people up a little bit and be like, well, I might look like some, you know, full of makeup and ridiculous costumes and larger than life, but you know, I can still stick to the traditions of maybe a conservative orchestra setting while just making it a little bit more fabulous and maybe reaching a younger generation who thinks it's archaic and boring, because it's not at all to
me.
It's you know, it's in my whole life.
Little known fact, I actually played trombone for 7 years in high school. So if you ever need a backup trombonist, just hit me up anytime.
That's incredible. You know, I've gotten over 500 emails over the last couple of years just from mentioning it on season 8. I've gotten like 500 emails of like, hey, my name is Charles. I play the harp. I live in Iceland. You know, I'd love to play with you. So I've been categorizing all these players and I'm finally now getting to do it. Hopefully I can bring it to Australia.
That would be incredible. And then we can get you back on the show again as well.
Who knows? You've
also been vocal in the past about Drag Race putting some pressure on queens that haven't appeared on the show versus those that have. Do you think that Drag Race has had a positive or like a negative impact on the local drag community? So queens that perform in local bars.
Well, it's funny, I got actually a lot of praise about this from the Drag Race family saying, you know, because I came back right after season 8 and I went right back to my local bar that I always worked at. And I did a viewing party every single week, even the episode that I got eliminated on.
Yeah.
And then I said to everyone, you know, I got eliminated and, you know, it was always packed. And I liked that I was bringing the business back to Brooklyn because, you know, I was born here. You know, I learned how to do what I do here. So why would I go somewhere else? And I got asked and offered a lot of money to go other places to host viewing parties. And I said, no, I actually like that I do one at home. Mm. And all the local queens and all the local bars really, really praised me for that. They said, you're really cool for like sticking here. And I said, well, I love it here. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I still did. And I did a viewing party every single week. I'm doing it tomorrow for the viewing party. I'm going to be at Metropolitan Bar right down the block from my house because, you know, it's Brooklyn and I love it. And when I'm here, I love to do it. But I talked to the local queens and it did make a difference to them because of the success of some of the queens on the show. Mm. They disappear and they travel a lot. You know, I've been traveling a lot, so I don't always get to talk to my old sisters as much as I'd like to. But I think it puts a fire under a lot of people's butt to, you know, audition and maybe, you know, I auditioned for 8 years.
No way.
I made Yeah, and I at a certain point, I mean, literally all of my friends who I would book at my very successful shows in New York, like Willem, Detox, Ivy Winters, Sharon, Alaska, I booked them all before Drag Race. And I would watch them all get on the show and then be successful and tour the world. And I was sitting there like, why? What did I, you know, what did I do? At that point, I was a local girl, you know, local girl watching these girls really be successful, make a little bit more money and get to travel the world and really share what they can do with everyone. And then I finally got there and I kind of knew how it felt because I felt beat down for 8 years, you know. And I talked to my sister and I said, well, if being on a show and traveling is something you want to do, it certainly helps to get your audition tape in and meet the right people and schmooze. And what makes it even harder now is the show's impact on just the world in general is that there are now 20 times the amount of drag artists who quit their jobs to be entertainers. You see what I'm saying? So it's, the competition is even harder now locally.
Yeah.
So I'm very thankful that I got on season 8 because it's only exploded once it got on VH1. Mm. And now that it airs in every country, you see what I'm saying? So now it's even harder. I show up every day and I'm like, who are these 20 queens that I've never met, like down the block from my house? You know, it's every day there's more and more queens, which is a double-edged sword. It's very wonderful. It helps the community. It's the family just keeps growing. But then the work is harder. Mm. And maybe newer queens work for a lot less. So I don't know. It's a double-edged sword. I could talk for an hour about this.
Oh, I think we've done.
I talked to all my sisters here in Brooklyn.
Well, I don't want to keep you for much longer because, yeah, we could go on
yeah.
for the whole episode doing so. But thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. We hope to see the Thorkestra down in Australia soon, as well as checking you out on Drag Me Down the Aisle on TLC.
I'm really excited.
Yeah, we love
it. Yeah, it's going to be great.
Thank you so much again.
And I hope to come back to Australia really soon.
Yes, please, please do. Please do.
So we've ups and downs this episode.
We've
gone on a roller coaster. We have drag queens. We have the war.
Vintage
we
have sex.
White picket fences.
The white picket fences. But always a pleasure to spend it with you guys.
Yeah.
And Mikey, if he was here.
Love you. Love our listeners. Please subscribe to all our socials.
Yeah.
Join our group. We hit like 500 members or something recently, I think, on the group. Yeah. So I don't know where the fuck you other people are.
Yeah. Thousands of people on the Facebook page that haven't joined the group. So fuck you all. Join the group.
Who will be on the show next week? Who will not be here? And who will be guesting? Who knows?
Lots of guests.
Who
knows?
What, well, our producer Dan knows, but I don't read any of his emails until recording day.
And one person gone each time. What about if next week none of us are here?
Oh.
And it's just four guests doing the show.
And then everyone decides they like that podcast better.
And that becomes the show.
Well,
on that note, thanks so much. And yeah, as Kyle was saying, please make sure you subscribe and also follow us on the Instagram at Gage Revolt.
And if you haven't already, give us fucking 5 stars.
Yeah, please. Give us 5 stars.
We deserve it. We've been around almost a year now.
On Apple Podcasts.
Yeah, Apple Podcasts. Fuck everything else.
But cool.
Go. Bye.
Oh, bye.
Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.